Okay, I want to just maybe change gear now for a few minutes now before we come to the end of this evening's service and we have the chance to fellowship together over tea and coffee. And that I want to try to take a look forward to the next year, and I want to suggest maybe something that might guide us, lead us, being significant for us in the year to come. Something I believe God is saying to us just now. Do you know, much of my early preaching in the ministry was done in Donegal. I grew up as a boy. After I was 6 years of age, we moved to the city of Derry, and I grew up there. And when I felt God's call into the Christian ministry, the first opportunities I got to preach, apart from in my own church, were in churches in Donegal. Names like St. Johnson and Ballylennon, Dunfanaghy and Carrigart, First and Second Rye and Trenta. You'll probably never have heard of most of those churches. Most of them are really small. In the case of Trenta, for example, which is now kind of a second church charge to the church in Letterkenny, in Trenta there were about 30 members, and usually most of the 30 would have been there on a Sunday morning. And when you went to places like these names I've just mentioned, you went to conduct worship there, you were really conscious of the fact that everybody there knew everyone else. It was a very intimate experience in more ways than one. If you'll pardon me for this story, I'll never forget on one occasion going to a small church in a rural area in County Donegal to take the Sunday morning service. And it was the second of two services that morning. So I'd come from the first church. And when I got to the second church, of course, before I wanted to go in to conduct worship, I needed to use the loo. So they showed me into the loo. When I saw the loo, I suddenly realized I was in a sort of a dilemma. The loo consisted of a metal container in a room which was divided off from the choir room by a wooden partition. I probably don't need to explain my dilemma in the circumstances, because I was going to have to leave that room in a moment or two and then go in and pray with the choir before we went in to lead worship. And it was an almost impossible task to do what I needed to do silently in the circumstances. So intimacy in congregations in Donegal can be a very literal thing. Okay. Life can't easily be like that here, definitely not in terms of the toilet and arrangements, but life can't easily be like that in a congregation this size. Factually, this congregation has the number of families which are equivalent to 2/3 of the total number of families in the Presbytery of Donegal. 2/3 of the whole presbytery in this one congregation. And that 2/3 of that presbytery would be served by approximately 8 ministers. Just we can't do what they do. The figures are just so completely different. Or are they? Because wasn't this Jesus' vision for the church? He said, my prayer is not for them alone, not just for the disciples that he had raised in John 17. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. Jesus prayed for the oneness of the church. Now the point is this, folks. You can't fall out with people you don't know. Isn't that why family divisions run so deep? Because when people in families fall out, it lasts sometimes a lifetime, because the people who have fallen out really know each other. And wasn't Jesus therefore implying by his prayer in John chapter 17 that in fact the church that he was building and for which he was about to die on the cross at Calvary was a body of people that were meant to know each other, to enjoy an element of intimacy? Paul's life points the way to intimate church on two levels. And this is what I want you to think about tonight, the example of Paul's life and what it means. And I want to suggest quickly just two things that I'd love you to take away with you, pray about and think about tonight and in the year ahead. The first level in which Paul's life testifies to us is on the level of friendship. You see, when Paul became a Christian, he hadn't a friend in the world. Says in Philippians chapter 3, Paul says about his life, circumcised on the 8th day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, in regard to the law, a Pharisee, As for zeal, persecuting the church. As for righteousness based on law, faultless. That was Paul's life story. And the moment Paul met Jesus Christ on the road to Damascus, there wasn't anybody from that background that would ever speak to him again. Not only was there no one from his background who would speak to him again, but nobody in the church of which he had just become a member would trust him. And therefore, the only way in which Paul could begin to have new friends after he became a Christian was that God organized it for him. It's a bit like when I was a boy, 6 years of age, my dad moved from what was then Argyle Place, now Westkirk on the Shankill Road, to become the minister of Ebrington and Derry. And I turned up a few days later at Ebrington County Primary School with about 300 other kids, none of whom I knew. And the principal of the school on my first day there introduced me to two boys, David Turner and Trevor Collins, who became friends. But those friendships didn't grow up in the normal way friendships grow up. You know, you play football with guys, you get to know them, you travel on the bus with them. None of that. I had to be kind of artificially introduced to these two people because I didn't know anybody. And that's kind of what God did for Paul. We read in Acts chapter 9 that God sends Ananias. God creates a friend for Paul, and the friend God created was most reluctant. It says, Ananias, when God calls him, says to God, "Lord," Ananias answered, I have heard many reports about this man and all the harm he has done to your people in Jerusalem, and he has come here with authority from the chief priest to arrest all who call on your name." Ananias didn't want to have anything to do with Saul. And yet when he called to see him on the instruction of God, his first two words to him were this: "Brother Saul." Paul's first friend after he became a Christian, Ananias. And when he went to Jerusalem, it was, as we sometimes say, deja vu all over again, because when he got to Jerusalem, exactly the same thing happened. When he goes there again, nobody wants to know him. When he came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. So he was in the same boat again, but for Barnabas. Barnabas was his first friend in the church at Jerusalem, and he introduced them to the others, and then Paul made friends. Paul's situation in the church was to change radically, because just 10 chapters later, in Acts chapter 20, Paul is meeting with the elders of the church in Ephesus before he travels for his trial and ultimately his death. And he calls the elders from the church at Ephesus to come. And we read this in Acts chapter 20. When Paul had finished speaking, he knelt down with all of them and prayed. They all wept as they embraced him and kissed him. What grieved them most was his statement that they would never see his face again. Paul had now many friends. And you know, this is why people stay at a church. People come to church for thousands of reasons, but they stay for only one, and that is that they make friends. Rick Warren of Saddleback has said this: people are not looking for a friendly church, they are looking to make friends. And Paul made a whole string of strategic friendships. The interesting thing was that all of them were with people who were younger than himself. John Mark, Silas, Timothy, Epaphroditus, Tychicus, Ananias and Sapphira, Aristarchus, and, as he says in one of his letters, our dear friend Luke. All these people were younger than Paul, and yet he cultivated friendship with them. I was watching in awe and wonder Wesley Bonner at the Anchor Boys display on Friday evening. With a Jedward mask on his face, wearing a tracksuit, bouncing up and down in the hall with the boys in the Anchor Boys, and he looked just at home. I don't know if he does this in the house regularly. I kind of challenged his daughter Rebecca afterwards and said, "Did you put your dad up to this?" "No, I did not," she said. He wanted to do it. So there he was in the middle of the floor with the boys in the company, enjoying himself, and the boys evidently enjoying it too. And I thought, that's what Paul did. He gathered these younger men around him, albeit he wasn't imitating Jedward. Why you would want to do that, I'm not sure. But he was gathering these young men around them, befriending them, mentoring them. Those kids will always remember Wesley. Maybe in later life they'll come back to ask his advice or his help, because they will remember that he was prepared to kind of get down to their level and enjoy good fun with them. They will never forget that. And these young men would never forget the mentoring they received from Paul. Paul was not just a leader, he was their friend. You know, Paul was like Jesus, because he believed the future would be better than the past, and the younger would be better than their elders. I think it's this incredible thing that Jesus Christ said. You remember what he said? If you think of his life and the amazing things he did, yet he said to the disciples, you will do even greater things than these. Is that not amazing? Jesus was saying, how could anything ever be better than the 3 years of that public ministry? Yet Jesus was saying, the future for the church is going to be even better than this. You guys are going to do more than I ever did. Paul was like that too. Paul believed that the future of the church was safe in the lives and the leadership of the young people he had mentored and made his friends. I was saying to Timothy on Friday night that I was in Everington, my congregation I grew up in, for a funeral of a family member the other day. And in Everington, they have a cabinet in the halls where they have a series of bits and pieces of memorabilia of the life of the 7th Londonderry Company of the Boys' Brigade, the one I was in as a boy. And I was heading out into the minister's room to pick my Bible up after the day was over, and there was a bunch of, shall I put it this way, more senior gentlemen staring at the various kind of exhibits inside the glass cage. And as I walked past, I heard one of them say to the other, ah, that was the BB when the BB really was the BB. I can assure you, as I watched on Friday night and in the other displays that I've been to since I'm a minister here, the boys in the 4th Newton Abbey Company of the Boys' Brigade get as much fun out of the BB as those guys did in their funny pillbox hats and awkward, you know, things you had of whiten and all the rest of it. These guys get just as much fun out of it. The best is not in the past. The best is in the future. How can we create more friendships? Especially friendships across the generations. Because people stay in church because they make friends. You know, I wonder if you remember Eddie Gibbs, who was here a few years ago. Christian pastor, theological lecturer, prolific author. I wonder, do you remember something he said when he was in Carnmoney that night for the presbytery service? He said that this guy who has doctorates from all sorts of places all over the world, who is an acknowledged international expert in church growth, took a decision about 2 or 3 years ago that he would never write another book on his own, but that every book that he would write in the future, he would write in consultation with one of his students. And that's what he's done. He's published 3 or 4 books, and he's published another book since he was here that night. And all of his books and his website, if you log on to his website, are done in conjunction with one of his students, because he said that that's the way it needs to be. I was at a conference, leadership conference in London last week, and a Baptist pastor from Edinburgh was challenging us about young leadership, and he said this: what justification is there ever to do ministry on your own? Jesus never did. Paul never did. What justification is there ever to do ministry on your own? The implication being that we always should have someone else with us who is learning to do ministry as they do it alongside us. Elders, why don't you take somebody with you when you're going to visit? Other people with leadership responsibilities, why don't you bring somebody with you in what you're doing? That's what Paul did. He brought somebody along. He taught them, and they watched what Paul did. They became his friend, and then they went out into ministry and worked like he worked. Friendship. How can we build friendship? How can we especially build friendship across the generations? How can we stop doing ministry on our own and start doing it always with someone else? Here's the second thing from Paul's life. Prayer. Paul knew lots of people, and lots of people knew Paul. But this large section of friends that he had was not the biggest thing in his life. The biggest thing in Paul's life, that would be Jesus. This was the one and only theme of Paul's converted life. Philippians 3 and 10, I want to know Christ. And for Paul, this meant all sorts of things, of course. It meant Bible study. Paul was a Pharisee and a scholar, and he had gone to Bible college, and he knew the Bible well. It meant personal encounters with God. He records some of them in his letters, and we read about them also in the book of the Acts. In fact, Paul was like Jacob, one of his forebears in his nation. You remember Jacob met with God one night and wrestled with God, and his body was left with the marks of it for all the rest of his earthly life. Paul was the same. Because of the revelations Paul received from God, he became a wounded man. He lived with a thorn in his flesh for all the rest of his life because of his experiences of the presence of God. He learned about Jesus as he did leadership. But supremely for Paul, it meant prayer. Ephesians chapter 6, Paul says, pray in the Spirit on all occasion with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. Just in case you missed it, the first time he says it three times in one verse. Pray. You know, no matter what else you do, unless you do that, you can't really know Jesus. You know, it's a bit like if you can think back to when you were a teenager and you were thinking about asking somebody out for the first time. Normally, and especially early teenage years, you know, you never ask that person out yourself. You know, you could be in their company and the words would get like to the tip of your tongue, but somehow they just couldn't get past your lips. You know, you couldn't say it. Couldn't say it because you thought she'd definitely say no. So the first time I went out with the woman who's now my wife, I got one of my friends to ask her, would she go? And foolishly, she said yes, and the rest is history. And that's the way it sometimes was. You couldn't summon up the courage to say the words, you know. But actually, unless you did find some words and began to speak, you would never get to know that person. And it's the same with Jesus, you know. That there's so much you can do. You can read the Bible and you can go to worship. And there's 1,001 things you can do. But until you start to speak out and start to talk to him, you can never really get to know him properly. And for that great conversation in this congregation, we have provided a resource. Paul's already mentioned it. I-56. Now you might say, look, I can pray without that. And yes, of course you can. But this is an invaluable resource for a number of reasons. First of all, because it helps us to break the silence. I don't know about you, but for large sections of my Christian life, the biggest problem I had with prayer was just actually getting started. You know, just speaking out to God, the things that were in my heart, and I was anxious about things, but I found it really difficult to talk. I don't know if that's your experience or not, just to say it. And sometimes it's really hard, especially at home. And you know the way we do this odd thing, the Jews never did this, you know, we do this thing where we pray in our heads. We actually don't speak it out. It's a sort of strange process that we can go through whereby we talk without talking. And that's how we mostly pray. And one of the reasons why we do that, because we're at home, somebody else would hear us, and we really don't want to do that. In I-56, there's nobody else there on the 24/7 at the weekends, and you can shout if you want. You can sing, some people hear, even dance, and you definitely wouldn't want to see that. But because it's your own space, you can break the silence. You can actually start to talk to God out loud. Not only so, but it helps us to avoid distractions. I live in a larger house than probably most of you do. In spite of the fact that I live in such a large house, it's really difficult to get a quiet enough time when the phone doesn't ring or somebody doesn't come in, you know, or whatever, where you can actually be on your own just to talk to God. But in I-56, I can do that 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I can guarantee nobody else is going to come knocking the doorbell or ringing my mobile phone. And thirdly, it helps us to be in company, yet still alone. See, the great thing about what we do in I-56 is, especially in 24/7 thing, is we're part of a chain. I took over from a married couple last night, and the first thing they did before they left was we stood in a circle together and we prayed for each other, and they kind of handed the baton over to me. And I was kind of part of what they were doing, but they weren't there while I was praying, and I wasn't there while they were praying. It enables you to be part of something bigger and yet still to be able to be alone in the presence of God. And the vision that we have for this work, our desire is that at some point over these next few years that we could cover all the week in prayer. That we could begin a conversation with God in this congregation that would start at the beginning of the week and would run through the whole week until the next Lord's Day. We wouldn't stop talking to him and asking for his guidance and calling down his power upon us, seeking for his love to work in the hearts of men and women and for his grace and strength to heal the sick. We want to get collectively to know Jesus face to face. I listened to Pete Gregg talking last week at the conference, 24/7 Prayer Guy, and he told this magic story about a friend of his. And his father had died, and after his father had died and the funeral was over, his stepmom said to him, who was a fair bit younger than his dad, stepmom said to him, "Look, would you like to come back to the house and take something that you could keep kind of as a memento of your dad?" So he came back to the house with his stepmom, and he went upstairs to the room, and he selected a sweater of his dad's, and he took it away with him. And Pete said, you know, it's from time to time when he was feeling like he really wanted to be reminded of his dad, he would wear the sweater. And Pete had looked at the sweater a number of times. It was kind of like a bluey color, and it's a bit unusual looking. But anyway, didn't say anything about it. And then a few months later, his stepmom was coming through the area, and she said she would call to see him. And so he thought, well, I'll wear my dad's sweater today, just in honor of my dad, seeing if my stepmom's coming. And when he opened the door to his stepmom, she burst out laughing all of a sudden. She looked at him and she said, "Why are you wearing my jumper?" Because when he went upstairs, he opened the wrong drawer and took one of his stepmom's jumpers rather than his dad's jumper. And all this time he had been wearing this thing that kind of made him feel closer to his dad, but hadn't even belonged to his dad in the first place. And one of the problems about our Christian lives is that so often there are things that we use because we say they make us feel closer to God, rather than taking the opportunity to come into his presence and just talk to him face to face. You know, if we could do two things in our church this year that would create real intimacy among us as a people, this is what they'd be. Friendship. Just building friendships, mentoring others, taking people under our wing and getting to know them and getting to love them and teaching them how to minister through working with us. And prayer. We could stop using things that kind of make us think we get closer to God and just get closer to God. Just take a slot in I-56 and start talking to him and see what incredible things happen as a result. Love you to sign up, more people to sign up to take a slot. We'd love to expand those slots out of the weekend right through the week. We'd love to start a conversation with God that would never end. Why don't you get on board with us?